Hello and welcome to the Essence of Life podcast. My name is Nicole Ming and I'm your host today. This podcast is all about depth, looking behind the scenes, diving deep into what life is at the core in its essence. Today we talk about the climax of life, somehow we talk about dying consciously and about the lessons and gifts death offers us. If we are courageous enough to dive deep into our fears and hopes and all that is associated with dying. The process of dying is still a big taboo in our Western society. We somehow forgot to die naturally. I deeply hope we'll be shifting your perception of dying and the end of life through our conversation today. My guest is George Poirier. George is an end-of-life guide and companion for more than 30 years, and he lives in the US. George is a Reiki master, a certified NLP practitioner, a practicing astrologer, and has extensive training in body-mind practices, as well as intense study of spiritual psychology. I became aware of him and his incredible work through the passing of Colin Tipping. I'm sure some of you know Colin Tipping and his radical forgiveness approach very well. My own life was never the same again after working with Colin in one of his last seminars in summer 2017 here in Switzerland. I'm deeply connected with Colin, his wife Joanne, and his work. So knowing that George is his companion on this journey into the afterlife was so calming. I'm so excited to talk with George Poirier today about a topic we usually try to avoid and to overlook. Welcome and thank you so much for being with us today, George Poirier.
It's my pleasure.
George, if we connect the dots of your own life and calling, when did this topic of death and dying first enter your life?
Well, a little over 30 years ago, when I had just completed my Reiki training, there was a very close friend of mine who was a psychotherapist, is a psychotherapist at the time. And she had a dear friend of hers, another psychotherapist, who was dying of cancer. And she called me one day and she said, would you please help my friend? And I said, sure. At that point, I really didn't know what I would do with her. But I started working with her, doing energy work and just talking to her and listening to her mainly. And it turns out that she had a very peaceful transition. So not long after that, I started working in a hospice in Houston, Texas, as a volunteer. And during my time there, I had many opportunities to work with different individuals that were dying in the hospice. Not all of them were really interested in energy work, but some of them were. And I found that I was able to comfort them as they moved through the end stages of life. Shortly after that, the same psychotherapist called me, and she said, I have another friend, another therapist, whose mother is passing, and she's way up in Philadelphia. I had never met any of these people, but she said, I got a call from my friend and his mother doesn't want to let go. She's having a hard time letting go. Could you help her? I said, I don't know exactly what I will do, but whatever. And I went into a meditation and I was spirit led to leave my body and go to this woman and dialogue with her. And she was afraid that, if she let go, there'd be no one on the other side to greet her. And I told her that there were many people, many loved ones on the other side that were there at that very moment waiting to receive her. And then the other message was that the daughter, another daughter, had to let her go. So I relayed all that information to the son, who was the psychotherapist that had contacted me. And he relayed that information to his sister. And as soon as she heard that and let her mother go, within 10 minutes, her mother passed. So that's how I got involved in this. And it really was a calling that was spirit-led. I never intended to do that kind of work. I didn't have any training in doing that kind of work. It just happened. And then over a period of years, people would come to me out of the blue with similar requests. And I would just mainly do exactly what I just described, help people transition into the afterlife. The last person that I worked with before Colin had been an advanced spiritual seeker, and she knew about the Book of the Dead. And so her request to me was that not only I help her get through the stages of death, but also to help her through the Bardo states in the afterlife, which I did. And that went beautifully. So Colin knew this because Colin and I had been in the men's group together for, 25 years. And long before he was diagnosed with cancer, he had mentioned to me, when my time comes, I want you to do that for me. So then finally, last November, when he finally surrendered to his cancer and knew that the end was near and brought in the hospice, that's when we talked about me being involved. And I told him that I would do anything he wanted me to do to help him on his journey. And I did. And that's how it started. It really wasn't anything that I pursued. It was just a calling, a spiritual calling.
The interesting part in your work, when I see it from the outside, is this part helping the person after death, right, being in the afterlife and being in contact with the person.
Right.
How did this come? How do you work? How can you do that?
Okay, the way that works for me is I go into a meditative state and I get into a mental telepathic communication with the soul, what the Tibetan Buddhists call the Bardo, and I dialogue with them. And so I'm able to dialogue with the soul of that person before and after the transition. And if they have the request, if they have the awareness to ask for help in the afterlife, then I'm able to continue that dialogue to help them through those Bardo states. And that terminology comes out of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. The Egyptian Book of the Dead has something very similar to that. But the text that I studied and I use in this afterlife work is the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Sometimes people don't have a request for that. And then it's just a telepathic communication with the soul to dialogue with them and help them release whatever they feel they need to release after they pass over.
Mm-hmm. So there are still things to release for some of them after dying?
Yes. Yes. The only real difference after transition is they drop the body. They drop the physical body. But mentally, they're able to communicate and for a long time are very present around their loved ones. So, yeah, that's the part of the communication that was very natural. It wasn't anything that was difficult in any way for me. It just happened. And it's very interesting.
How can you help them? Just be there and receive whatever they need, or how can you help them?
Well, the way I help them in the first Bardo state, and it's called the Bardo state of clear light, that's a very blissful state where the soul is getting used to having left the physical body. There's an adjustment period. If a person doesn't have a conscious death, in the an instance would be a violent death, an accident, or a murder, a lot of times the soul doesn't know that they've actually died.
I heard of that. They don't realize that they died.
Yeah. And so they're trying to get back into their body. And they need assistance. A lot of times, loved ones on the other side will come to them and say, try to explain to them that, you're out of your body. You can't get back into that body. So that's an area, if a person's confused about that, I can help them move through that. And one of the instances where at the time my wife's best friend died violently and suddenly, it took days for me to dialogue with her and explain to her that, you know, she needs to move on. But she had little children, very little children, and she was very concerned about their well-being. And so part of what I did was talk to my wife and her family and make sure that things happened with her children the way she wanted them to have happen. And she needed that reassurance before she could move on into the light. So a lot of what happens in the first Bardo state is that readjustment. In other words, the adjustment of the conscious part of the soul no longer being attached to a body. And that's for a period of time. Most of the time, that's pleasant because, you know, if a person dies from a terminal illness, then they know they're going to transition. So they're not surprised after they transition. Many cases, they pray for it, right? So that's easy. The second Bardo state is where the real work kicks in for me. That's called the hallucination state. And that's where the soul get confronted with their desires, their unfulfilled desires that they had during their life. They have to let go of all of that, because if they don't, they're going to become earthbound. And so it's really important. And that's where in my work then is there's certain prayers that I recite telepathically, talking to the soul to guide them in choosing the right. They're confronted with deities and different colored lights. And it's important that they not be seduced by the light that's associated with the unprocessed desire. And so my guidance is guiding them through all of that. And every day there's a different layer of those that they go through. If they get through that, at that point, they can choose reincarnation or liberation. Liberation would mean that they're not coming back. They don't want to come back, right? But most people do want to come back for different reasons. The big reason is so that they can serve others. They've achieved enlightenment and they want to help people and they want to have a life of service. And so the choice then is to reincarnate or not. And then the third stage, the third Bardo stage, is for those who do decide to reincarnate. And then that's the reentry state. And in that state, it's about preparing them for reentry.
So spoken in earthly time, they don't have time over there, I think. Time is an illusion. But how long could this process take place? And are you still in contact, for example, with Colin? Where is he in this state?
Colin achieved, the simple answer to your question is it's approximately 49 days, okay? 49 days is usually how long it takes, assuming a person is going to reincarnate. Colin did not choose to reincarnate. Colin achieved liberation on the sixth day of the Bardo, the second Bardo. I'll be writing about this. Colin wants me to write a book about our journey together. And I've already notes that I compiled from November of last year and, you know, until just recently. And I'm going to start the book with when we first met 26 years ago. And that's a big project that's ahead of me.
So he's guiding you from the other side somehow?
Yes, he very much so. Yeah. Very much so. And he can be very stern, I must say.
As we know him. If he has stern. A project, then he goes for it. And it didn't change.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's so interesting to know about that. Is this something you know deep inside of you, or is it something out of the experience of these 30 years of so many souls? You were the companion through this transformation, or is it the essence of your experience, what you experienced?
Yeah, I would say about that for everybody, most of the important pivotal relationships that we experience have a karmic connection. Every one of them have a karmic connection. We may not always remember exactly what that is, but that's really not important. What's important is the lessons, the karmic lessons that we're presented with that we need to process through in this lifetime, right? But those people, you know, the important relationships, obviously the family of origin, sometimes our worst enemies are people that we've had many lifetimes with.
So what can we do in our lives to be prepared for this transformation? How can we live consciously to be best prepared for this transformation?
Well, I would say that, you know, the best thing that we can probably do would be to meditate and get involved in some contemplative practices. That'd be the number one best way to prepare at any time in life. That would be good. Also, to not be so attached to the physical world. One way to do it is what I just said, meditation. The second is to do inner work, like the work that Colin brought to the world. Radical forgiveness is a great way to process our traumas in life and the repressed emotions in life. And by doing that, we can become more consciously aware and more self-aware. And self-awareness is really the key, because self-awareness is what's going to allow us to approach our death in a more conscious way.
Is it something our society forgot somehow and now relearns, or more and more people are aware of it?
I think more people are aware of it. The whole hospice movement, I think, has helped a lot. People are more aware of the stages, especially, that we go through when we approach death. Education-wise, I would say that's probably where the people can get the kind of input that we're talking about. The other thing is to read books about conscious dying. There are a lot of books that are available that people can read about it. Kubler-Ross's book, Death and Dying, that she wrote, I guess, back in the 60s. You know, she did a tremendous amount of research. In fact, the whole hospice movement really got a huge boost from her work. And I would say that that would be a great way to do it. Another important thing is to have a living will. The biggest problem that goes on around all this issue is people don't talk about dying. They just don't talk about it, you know. They deny death and they don't want to speak about it. And so all that does is increase the anxiety and the suffering that people go through at the end. Having a living will is good, because there you can at least begin to talk to your loved ones about, you know, how you want to die. Do you want to be resuscitated or not? You can choose, you know, a lot of different options. You can even begin to plan whether what you want to have happen to your body, whether you want a burial or a cremation or how you want that done. Where you want to die is an important thing to talk about. Do you want to die in a hospital? Do you want to die in a hospice? Do you want to die at home? If people want to die at home, there's a whole lot of issues that come up around planning that I think most people have never even thought about. That's an important conversation to have with loved ones. I think having a dialogue with loved ones is probably the most important thing to do about how do you want to go? How do you want to die?
And you don't start when you have a diagnosis, a terminal illness?
Don't wait till then. Do it. You know, have a living will. At least a living will, I think, is a good place to start. And anybody can do that at any age, really.
So you think by getting into this conversation, we can do something against this taboo?
Yeah, I do. I think that those conversations are essential in being able to prepare oneself consciously, and also to talk about who do you want involved in your process. You know, like if you're going to die at home, there needs to be a team, and building that team is really important. Even though you're going to have a home hospice situation there, home hospice is only there a couple, 2-3 days a week for an hour, hour and a half. And so usually the husband or a wife or some family member is going to have to coordinate bringing in help. And as a person approaches death, the need for that help increases tremendously. And there needs to be a team of people, volunteers, that are willing to help out to do that. And that's a good conversation to have.
Mm-hmm. You talked about also the fears we encounter during this process, and also the physical symptoms and pain. What do you think of this whole palliative care interventions and all these kind of things, which somehow I experienced this last year when my grandfather passed away? He was so conscious, and then in the last 7 hours, they I don't know what they gave him in the hospital, but then he was numb and away already. Is this good, or is this, do we as a society try to numb dying?
Well, now you're getting into a very complex issue. And with palliative care, number one, is to create comfort, to make the transition as peaceful as possible. Now, depending on what a person is dealing with, you know, like typically in cancer, there's a lot of pain. And it's hard for a person to die peacefully if they're writhing in intractable pain. Palliative care usually will administer whatever drugs are necessary to keep a person comfortable, but not treat, you know, not treat any particular illness, not to try to treat the cancer or treat whatever a person is dying with. As far as being, you know, wide awake, usually that's pretty rare. My experience in hospice is that towards the end, towards the very end, the last, you know, couple of days, most patients, or what we call residents, we didn't call them patients in the hospice, they go into a death coma. And that happens regardless of what the medications are. And then a lot of reasons for that physiologically, but the body begins to shut down and the respiratory rate slows down, heart rate slows down, and people just go into a coma. And then eventually they stop breathing. So during that stage, very few people are awake for that. They're not really awake for that. And that's when the separation process begins, where the soul begins to separate from the physical body. And there can be some emotional processing happening there during those last few days.
So you're in contact with the soul during this?
Yeah, that some of my work involves being in contact with the soul during that period of time to help them process whatever unfinished business they have with whoever or whatever at the end of their life. It's very typical for that to occur.
Is it a quality of also holding space for whatever there is, or do you really do something?
Well, actually, it's interesting that you asked that question, because that's where a very beautiful, what I call death vigil, needs to take place, where people that absolutely are loving and supportive of the individual be actually in the room, preferably having people in the room around the clock with, you know, candles going, soft music, and creating a sacred space for the soul to begin to leave. That's what facilitates that process the best. And that's where picking the right people is important, to have in that room.
The energy is important, which is created.
Yes, very important. You don't want angry energy in that room. No discordant energy of any kind. Just loving, supportive, peaceful energy is important.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, the work you do. I saw on your website that you're talking about your Poirier method. What is that all about, or what is kind of different from another usual death guide?
Well, that's just me. I mean, that's just, you know, my way of working with people.
Do you think of learning others?
Yeah, that's what Colin is all about. Now we're getting into
future.
Yeah, I mean, when I was going through this with Colin, you know, he's a teacher, right? I mean, you know, he is the teacher. He was a born teacher and he's still a teacher. And so he's all about, well, now you know, George, you got to do this for other people and not just me. And not only that, but you need your legacy. You need to teach people what you do. So that is something that he has been on me about big time. And I'm beginning to see maybe a way to do that. But I think rather than, you know, try to teach people in a classroom, you know, on that level didactically, I think that building my team, right, to work with me with others and having them work with me and watch me what I do, and then they develop their own style, is the best way to do it. That's where I am about it right now. And I have some people in mind that I want on my team. And I think that's how it's going to work more will be revealed how I teach others.
I'm so much looking forward, whatever comes up from the other side.
I'm sure Colin will guide me in all that.
I'm sure too. Going back to this point in your life 30 years ago when you left the business world for doing this work, take us back to this year or these moments. How was the calling of life? You knew you had to leave what you did before. How was that for you?
Well, that's another interesting topic. Back then, in 87, three important things happened in my life. I sold a business that I had early in 87. And then in July of 87, my father died suddenly, and my wife and I separated, got a divorce. And that was quite a traumatic year for me emotionally. And not long after that, I think it was in October of that year, the same psychotherapist, this woman that I had mentioned earlier, she said, you know, there's a psychic that has come to Houston from California, and you should have a reading. And, you know, here I am fresh out of the business world. I wasn't really into psychic readings much at that point in my life, but I did it anyway. And that psychic reading changed my life. She was telling me things that had gone on in my life when I was a child, out of body work and, you know, doing all this, waking up at night and doing ritual in my sleep in the kitchen. And she just told me things that I had never shared with any other human being ever. And she just went through my life and said, remember this, remember that. And I'm listening to her and I'm connecting the dots and I'm beginning to see the pattern she's talking about. And she said, you're not really a businessman, which was crazy because I was just spent 25 years in business. He said, you're a healer. And that's the work you're supposed to be doing, and that's the work you're going to be doing. Well, you know, I had no way to integrate that, any of that, right? I mean, that was like, but the following year, I was training for the Olympics in single sculls rowing. I don't know if you're familiar with what single scull, but it's, anyway, it's rowing in a single boat, one-person boat. And one day after I was done training, a voice came into my head and said, when you're done this time in your life, when this completes this chapter of your life, you will begin to pursue your work as a healer. And I didn't know what to make of any of that. You know, they actually didn't. The way the voice said it says you'll begin your mission. And I didn't know what my mission was, really. Well, I had no idea what that was. But not long after that, I'd say about 6 months later, I was led to do the Reiki training, and my life changed drastically. Right after that is when I got, it's just like everything changed, and I started doing the healing work, and the rest is ancient history. I mean, my whole life completely changed overnight.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
How was it for you to change so much of your life? There's a lot of courage maybe needed, or was it just you had no choice?
It was I had no choice, and at the same time it was a bit terrifying because, you know, I was all into planning everything and knowing exactly how things would proceed in my life and business, and, you know, that's essential to be successful. And here I am in a world where none of that worked. I mean, anytime I try to apply any of my, you know, ways of doing, nothing worked, you know, and so I had to surrender to what spirit brought me. And it was really scary. I mean, it was really scary. It was really scary for a long time, actually. It took me years to get totally comfortable with that. But eventually I did.
It's incredible. I'm so grateful for the conversation we had, for your openness and the insight, and yeah, what we can do to die consciously in the future. What do you wish for your own dying process? Is there anything you wish for?
Well, Yeah, I have, you know, I have a living will, and, you know, I don't want to be resuscitated in any way. I want to be cremated. There's a lake up in the mountains of North Carolina where I want my ashes to be laid to rest. And in my current living situation, if something were to happen, I would want to die at home. And I would have home hospice here. My life partner, Nancy, would be the person that would be coordinating everything here once I wasn't able to do that. I'd probably work through the stages of death with other men in my men's group. And my brother, Gregory Possman, who was with me with Colin on the day Colin transitioned, I would probably ask him to work with me in the afterlife through the Bardo States. Well, all the brothers were there the moment that Colin transitioned, but there was one of the brothers, the guy I just mentioned, Gregory, where, you know, he and I actually worked together to do the very final prayer work that allowed Colin's spirit to leave. And I feel that, and he's a channel, he's an internationally known channel, so he's very connected to the spirit world, and I feel he'd be the best qualified to work with me through the Bardo States.
So everything is fixed and planned, and maybe life unfolds, I hope, as you wish. Dying is also a lot about surrendering. How can we learn to surrender also while living already? Is there anything advice you could give our listeners how to more surrender to life, living more from the inside out than from the outside in?
I have a saying that I share with a lot of people, and it's just be still and allow what is. I think the key to surrendering consciously to life as it presents itself to us is to honor the what I call the isness of life. Life happens, and then we react to it mentally and emotionally. And I think the challenge is to accept life as it is. And otherwise, we're in a constant state of anxiety, trying to manipulate what is. And that's a hard thing for a lot of people to hear, and even a harder thing for a lot of people to do. But to whatever degree an individual can accept life as it is, will be able to accept death as it is.
Mm-hmm. The best preparation, maybe, to accept life as it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful. I thank you so much, George, for this incredible gift you have, for all you share, for the book you're about to write. I'm so much looking forward, and looking forward to the wisdom in this book. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for our conversation.
Thanks for the opportunity to share this with you.
Thank you so much. Wishing you all the very best. This was the beautiful conversation with George Poirier, who is a death companion and guide. It was very interesting getting all these insights, very new information about the afterlife, about the stages the soul goes through in this afterlife, and all that he shared, also from Colin Tipping's passing, from his transformation. It's so impressive, and what a gift to encounter a person like George. I'm so grateful, and if you are looking for more information on this topic of dying consciously, please have a look at the show notes. I will put some book tips there, and also the website of George. If you'd like to give us a feedback on our conversation, share something from your life concerning this topic, please do so. You'll find all the contact information and the Instagram and Facebook profile in the show notes as well. Thank you so much. I will now change to German. to summarize our conversation for the German-speaking people so that they get the essence of it as well. Thank you so much for listening and for diving deep into a topic usually quite a taboo in our society. Thank you for your time and openness and courage to face death. I'm very grateful that you were listening to our conversation and wishing you a wonderful day. Ja, das war das Gespräch mit Georges Poirier. Für die, die vielleicht des Englischen noch nicht ganz so mächtig sind, die aber trotzdem das Thema interessiert, wie kann ich bewusst sterben, wie kann ich so sterben, dass der Sterbeprozess eine spirituelle Praxis wird, ein spiritueller Initiationsweg für meine Seele. Ja, ich möchte für dich zusammenfassen, worüber George gesprochen hat, was er geteilt hat. Ich habe ihn zuerst gefragt, wie er denn überhaupt mit dem Thema Sterbebegleitung in Kontakt kam, ob das ein Thema war, das ihn sein Leben begleitet hat oder wie er in Kontakt kam mit dieser Berufung. Und er hat dann erzählt, wie er vor 30 Jahren plötzlich eine Anfrage gekriegt hat von einer Psychotherapeutin, einer ganz guten Freundin, die ihn gefragt hat, ob er helfen könnte. Eine Bekannte von ihr sei am Sterben. Und wie er da einfach mit dieser Seele Kontakt aufgenommen hat und die dann so wunderbar diese Transition machen konnte in das Leben nach dem Leben. Und kurz darauf kam ein anderer Freund von ihm, ein Psychotherapeut, auf ihn zu, dessen Mutter am Sterben war in Philadelphia, also etwas weg von ihm. Und er ging dann in einen meditativen Zustand und hat dann telepathisch mit dieser Seele, dieser sterbenden Frau, Kontakt aufgenommen und hat wahrgenommen, dass sie nicht loslassen konnte aus zwei Gründen. Einerseits hat sie sich gefürchtet oder war sich unsicher, ob jemand auf der anderen Seite auf sie wartet, was dann auch sein wird. Und er konnte ihr dann telepathisch übermitteln, dass ganz viele liebe Seelen da auf sie warten und sie empfangen werden. Und das Zweite, was er aufgenommen hat, dass ihre eigene Tochter sie nicht gehen lassen konnte. Er hat das dann seinem Freund mitgeteilt, der Sohn der Frau, die am Sterben war. Und dieser Sohn sprach mit seiner Schwester. Und sobald dieses Gespräch stattgefunden hat und die Schwester ihre eigene Mutter loslassen konnte, starb diese innerhalb von 10 Minuten. Ja, solche eindrücklichen Beispiele haben ihn vor 30 Jahren auf diesen Weg geführt. Ich habe ihn dann gefragt, was ich ganz speziell finde an seiner Methode, dass er ja mit den Sterbenden noch über den Tod hinaus arbeitet. Und er hat dann erklärt, dass es im tibetischen Book of the Death, im tibetischen Totenbuch, eigentlich 3 Stadien gibt, sogenannte Bardo-Stadien. Bardo heißt Seele, also Stadien der Seele, die diese durchläuft, nachdem sie den Körper verlassen hat. Das erste Stadion ist pure Gnade. Das ist das Stadion, wo die Seele sehr glücklich ist, weil sie den Körper ja und vor allem auch die körperlichen Schmerzen, vor allem wenn man ja in einem Sterbeprozess ist, nach einer zum Beispiel schweren Krankheit, unheilbaren Krankheit, dann ist die Seele sehr glücklich, diesen Schmerz nicht mehr zu spüren. Sie war sich auch bewusst, dass sie stirbt. Und sie ist einfach in diesem seligen Zustand, diesen Körper, diese Schmerzen los zu sein. Anders ist es in diesem ersten Bardo-Stadium, wenn jemand stirbt, der ganz überraschend stirbt. Zum Beispiel bei einem Unfall oder auch wenn jemand einem Gewaltverbrechen zum Opfer fällt, dann ist es so, hat George uns erklärt, dass diese Seelen wie versuchen, zurück in den Körper zu kommen, weil sie nicht realisieren, dass sie gestorben sind. Und da sei es ganz, ganz wichtig, da würden auch zum Teil Seelen aus der anderen Welt ihnen dann erklären, dass sie gestorben seien oder eben er in seiner Arbeit, dass er erklären kann, dass es kein Zurück in den Körper gibt, dass die Seele weitergehen soll. Dann in dieser zweiten Phase, diesem zweiten Bardo-Stadium, da wird die Seele nochmal konfrontiert mit ihren Wünschen, die nicht erfüllt wurden in diesem Leben. Da gäbe es auch wie Halluzinationen, verschiedene Lichter, die sehr verführerisch seien für die Seele, ihnen zu folgen. Und da sei es ganz wichtig, dass die Seele den richtigen Weg findet und nicht Dingen, die sie nicht getan hat oder die sie gerne getan hätte, mit dem hadert und da hängen bleibt. Ja, und dann, wenn sie dieses Stadium durchläuft, entscheidet die Seele, ob sie frei werden möchte, er hat das Liberation genannt in Englisch, oder ob sie sich wieder inkarnieren möchte. Und er sagt, ganz, ganz viele entscheiden sich, wieder zu kommen, weil sie ein großes Bedürfnis haben, zu helfen, anderen zu dienen. Wenn die Seele entscheidet, wieder zu inkarnieren, dann kommt sie in dieses dritte Bardo-Stadium. Da geht es darum, dieses Wiederinkarnieren vorzubereiten. Und da sei seine Aufgabe dann, sie genau auf die nächste Inkarnation eigentlich vorzubereiten, ihnen dort zu helfen. Ja, er hat dann uns auch erzählt, dass Colin Tipping, den er ja begleitet hat in seiner Transformation, der ganz bekannte Lehrer, der uns ein unglaubliches Werk hinterlassen hat, ein Riesengeschenk mit der Radical Forgiveness, mit radikaler Vergebung, der uns gezeigt hat, dass aus einer größeren Sicht die Dinge immer richtig sind und wir deshalb uns und auch anderen absolut vergeben können, für was immer wir zusammen kreiert haben, an Schmerz, an Leid. Ja, und er hat uns erzählt, dass Colin am sechsten Tag dieses zweiten Bardo-Stages, der übrigens um die 49 Tage geht, dieses zweite Stadium, wo die Seele entscheidet, kommt sie wieder oder möchte sie frei sein. Bereits am sechsten Tag hat er dieses Stadium erreicht und ist jetzt in diesem freien Stadion. Sprich, er hat sich gegen eine Inkarnation entschieden. Ja, ich habe ihn gefragt, wie können wir uns denn vorbereiten, um gut zu sterben? Wie können wir leben, um gut zu sterben? Er sagt, das ganz Wichtigste und Beste, was wir tun könnten, sei Meditation und regelmäßige kontemplative Praktiken. Das Zweite, was er empfehlen kann, dass wir nicht so sehr an dieser physischen Welt anhaften, dass wir uns bewusst sind, dass das alles vergänglich ist. Und das Dritte, was er sehr empfiehlt, die innere Arbeit zu machen, genau wie es Colin uns auch hinterlassen hat, zum Beispiel, indem wir vergeben, indem wir unser Leben aufräumen, indem wir Dinge transformieren, vielleicht auch aus unserer Kindheit, innere Kindarbeit. Also diese ganze innere Arbeit hilft enorm, am Ende der Seele loszulassen. Was ganz wichtig sei dieses Selbstbewusstsein, bei sich selbst anzukommen, weil das dann uns erlaube, in einer bewussten Art und Weise dem Tod zu begegnen und auch loszulassen. Was auch ganz wichtig sei, aus seiner Erfahrung, er hat jetzt 30 Jahre Leute beim Sterben begleitet, in den Tod begleitet, dass wir einen letzten Willen haben und dass wir den auch unseren Liebsten kommunizieren, und zwar nicht erst, wenn wir eine unheilbare Krankheit haben oder eine andere Diagnose kriegen und wissen, wir haben nur noch kurz zu leben. Er sagt, es ist jederzeit möglich, mit seinen Angehörigen zu diskutieren und zu besprechen, wie will ich bestattet werden, wo will ich bestattet werden, wie will ich sterben, möchte ich in einem Spital sterben, in einem Hospiz, zu Hause. Auch ganz wichtig, sich ein Team zusammenzustellen, sich zu überlegen, wen möchte ich um mich haben in meinem Sterbeprozess. Und mit dem würde man ganz viel Angst und Leiden in dieser letzten Zeit vermeiden, indem man das einfach schon kommuniziert, klärt und regelt. Ja, ich habe ihn gefragt, wie er denn wirklich vor diesen 30 Jahren zu seiner Arbeit gekommen ist. Und er sagt, das Jahr 1987 sei für ihn ein sehr traumatisches, sehr intensives Jahr gewesen. Er habe im Frühling sein Business verkauft, im Sommer sei ganz überraschend sein Vater verstorben. Kurz darauf hätten sich seine Frau und er getrennt und ließen sich scheiden. Und in diesen ganzen Turbulenzen, in dieser Lebenskrise, habe eine gute Freundin ihm von einem Medium erzählt, ein Medium aus Kalifornien, das in die Gegend komme. Und sie empfahl ihm ein Reading, also eine Sitzung mit diesem Medium zu machen. Und er hat gelacht und gesagt, er, der in der Businesswelt zu Hause war und bis dato gar nichts am Hut hatte mit solchen Dingen, hat sich irgendwie auf dieses Reading eingelassen und diese eine Sitzung hat sein Leben komplett verändert. Dieses Medium hat ihm Dinge aus seiner Kindheit erzählt, die er selbst noch nie jemandem erzählt hatte, dass er sie erlebt hat. Und sie hat ihm dann auch gesagt, er sei ein Heiler und werde auch als Heiler arbeiten. Ja, das war für ihn alles total neu und total fremd. Aber ein Jahr später etwa, als er als Ruderer auf die Olympischen Spiele trainierte, kam nach einem Training, hörte er plötzlich eine deutliche Stimme in seinem Kopf und die sagte, you're done, es ist erledigt. Und die Stimme sagte ihm, dass dieses Kapitel seines Lebens zu Ende sei und er als Heiler arbeiten und seine Mission jetzt beginnen werde. Er hatte aber keinen Plan, was seine Aufgabe oder Mission überhaupt sein könnte. Also das hat ihn vor ziemliche Herausforderungen gestellt, auch ziemlich überfordert und hat sein ganzes Leben natürlich komplett auf den Kopf gestellt. 6 Monate später begann er das Reiki-Training und sein Leben änderte sich von Grund auf. Es war nichts mehr, wie es war. Alle seine Konzepte, die er so gerne anwandte in der Businesswelt, alles griff nicht mehr. Es sei zutiefst beängstigend gewesen und es hätte auch Jahre gedauert, bis er sich in diesem neuen Leben eingefunden habe und das Ganze geschiftet war, in wie er funktioniert hat. Genau. Ich habe ihn dann noch gefragt, was er denn sich für seinen eigenen Tod wünsche. Und er sagte, er habe alles festgelegt, wo, wie, was. Er möchte zu Hause sterben, er möchte verbrannt werden, kremiert. Er möchte, dass seine Asche in einem See verstreut werde, er möchte auch nicht wiederbelebt werden und er wünsche sich vor allem, dass in seinem Team jemand mit dabei ist, der jetzt auch bei Colin mit ihm diesen letzten ganz wichtigen Tag der Transformation von Colin Tipping mit ihm gestaltet hat und die finalen Gebete gesprochen, die Colin dann möglich gemacht haben, diesen Körper loszulassen und als Seele weiterzugehen. Ja, ich habe ihm von Herzen natürlich gedankt für seine Arbeit. Ich habe ihn gefragt, ob er uns einen Tipp hat, was für uns wichtig ist im Leben hinsichtlich des Todes. Und er hat gesagt, etwas vom Allerwichtigsten sei, dass wir lernen, das Leben so anzunehmen, wie es ist, dass wir dem Leben erlauben, so zu sein, wie es sich gerade zeigt, ohne etwas ändern zu wollen, anders haben zu wollen, manipulieren zu wollen, beeinflussen zu wollen, sondern das Leben anzunehmen, wie es sich uns zeigt. Das sei ein ganz, ganz großer Schlüssel, auch im Hinblick dann auf und das Ende unseres Lebens. Ja, das ist in a nutshell, was George Poirier mit uns geteilt hat. Er hat auch erzählt, dass Colin Tipping immer noch mit ihm in Kontakt ist, dass Colin ihn ermutigt, ein Buch zu schreiben über seine Arbeit, ein Buch zu schreiben über diesen Prozess bei Colin und wie er mit ihm gearbeitet hat und auch Menschen zu lehren, wie sie Sterbende auf diese Weise begleiten können, wie es George in diesen 30 Jahren für sich etabliert hat, für sich herausgefunden hat und was seine Arbeit so einzigartig macht. Ja, das war diese Episode. Ich habe mich entschieden, diese kurze Zusammenfassung ans Ende dieses Podcasts zu stellen, weil eine Untertitelung einfach ein unglaublicher Aufwand gewesen wäre. Und ich glaube auch, es ist wichtig, dass du diese Episode hören kannst. Du kannst direkt zu dieser Zusammenfassung switchen, wenn du das Englische dir nicht zutraust, dem zu folgen. Oder du kannst dir das Englische anhören und jetzt hier diese Zusammenfassung noch hören. Und ich glaube, dass das ein ganz guter Weg ist. Ich bin gespannt, ob du mir dazu was mitteilen magst, wie das für dich war. Wir werden demnächst auch wieder einen englischen Podcast haben und ich würde das dann wieder genauso handhaben. Nun wünsche ich dir, dass du einiges mitnehmen kannst an Weisheit, die George geteilt hat, und dass du dich dem Leben zuwendest und das Leben so annehmen kannst, wie es sich dir zeigt. Ja, wenn du irgendwas teilen magst, was in dir anklingt bei dieser heutigen Episode, dann hast du die Möglichkeit dazu. Ich tue in die Shownotes die Links, wo du uns erreichen kannst. Ich tue auch die Website von George Barré dort rein und ich werde auch noch das Buch von Frau Kübler-Ross, das er erwähnt hat, und das tibetische Totenbuch, da werde ich dir auch die zwei Buchtipps noch da rein tun. Ja, ich freue mich, wenn du uns ein Feedback gibst und ich freue mich, wenn wir uns bald hier wieder begegnen. Ich danke dir ganz herzlich fürs Zuhören und wünsche dir noch einen wunderbaren Tag. Alles Liebe, deine Nicole.